Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tuesday night with not one, not three, but the Two Guys Soccer Show. I am Mike, he is Stead, and we are
Hello.
Two guys of the aforementioned Two Guys Soccer Show. And as always, we are brought to you by the people down at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle on 4844 Cordell Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland. Our sponsors for this evening. Stead, we're about a day late. But how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm coming off of an elbow surgery I had last week, so luckily I've shaken the fuzz from the medication, and at least I was able to sit down and watch a lot of soccer this weekend. So I'm fighting with one arm, but you know I'm still swinging, so I'm here. I'm good. How you doing this week?
I'm doing all right. I'm not in the same circumstance that you are in. I've got both arms. I'm not sure how good those work, but I'm fighting pretty close to 100%.
All right.
So you got to watch a little bit of soccer this weekend while you were on the mend.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting weekend, if I do say so myself.
I agree.
I feel like we have a couple of things to talk about, so let's not stand on formality and just get right into it.
Let's talk
about the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there was a little bit of all of it. So
yeah, and a lot of in between.
Always, age before
well,
beauty.
Yeah. All right. Well, sounds good. Sounds good. I'll take that. I'll take that. Age comes wisdom, and I know it's early. I know you shouldn't put the cart in front of the horse. I know you should not be talking about what's going to happen in May and September, but Liverpool's looking good. They're looking good.
Yes, they are, sir.
That's my
good.
They are still perfect. They have not lost a game yet this season. They have not drawn a game yet this season. And they didn't even look their best in their game this weekend against Southampton, but they still managed to put together a relatively dominating performance. And from our many, many, many associates that are Liverpool fans, of course, most of them are not quite drinking the Kool-Aid yet about Liverpool, but they have to feel pretty excited with the way this team's looked. And with their upcoming fixtures against Chelsea in the League Cup and in the Premier League, they have to feel pretty good about maintaining their perfect run this week. And so I suspect that Liverpool's going to be setting the early stage of dominance. And if they can maintain, they're going to be a really, really, really tough out. But looks like I'm not the only person. A couple of the big-time pundits on TV also have Liverpool winning the league this year. So they look good. And it looks like that money they spent for Virgil van Dijk is really paying off at that center-half position.
What were you more impressed with this week from Liverpool? Was it the win over Southampton on the weekend or that late win that they picked up against PSG in the Champions League?
I'm going to go with the win over Southampton this weekend because the offense didn't look like they were quite there at the beginning of that game. And, you know, Mo Salah is still trying to get his feet under him. And, again, you know, I'm still not sold on PSG and Champions League. And with them, even with they got a late winner with an excellent play by Firmino, an excellent shot by Firmino. And granted, I didn't watch that game, but I did try to see as many highlights as I could. But Liverpool seemed to be much more up for that game than they were for Southampton. So because they were prime for a squad that's had a good Premier League run for a while, I actually don't remember the year that Southampton came up. And they've maintained. And they've proven to have a very quality farm system down there. That's kind of an American term. But they have a lot of good young players that they develop who go on to bigger and better things. And we can start talking about with Gareth Bale, and we can with the most recently with Sadio Mane. So they have some talent. I was going to throw in Theo Walcott, but I changed my mind because He didn't look all that good this weekend. And but that was a game that they easily could have been drawn on. And even though they were playing at home, that was a prime game for Southampton to try and get out from the bottom of the league, try to steal a draw, and, you know, show Liverpool that, hey, you know, you guys aren't that much better than the rest of us. And Liverpool, not only did they beat them by 3 goals. That's a lot. That's a lot to overcome. So I felt that was more impressive, but also I think that's more of a knock on PSG as opposed to praise for Liverpool's performance in that Champions League game.
Number one, the answer to your question is 2012 was the year that they came back up.
So they've had a good run, yeah.
You know, 6 seasons in the Premier League, that's a pretty good run. So, And it is more of a selling team. Their model is develop good young talent. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the Gareth Bales, the Theo Walcotts, throw in Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Virgil van Dijk, who wasn't actually one of their guys, but they did buy him from Celtic and did sell him on as a profit.
Right.
Dejan Lovren, Adam Lallana.
Yeah.
You know, basically Liverpool's model for about 5 or 6 years has been buy whoever's the best player at Southampton and develop from there.
Right.
I do believe that they are a solid Premier League club. I think they're going to struggle a little bit this season.
I agree.
But that being said, I think you were wrong. I think that the more impressive thing was the win over PSG, because for the last 4 or 5 years, that would have been a game set of circumstances that they would have lost. Going up 2-1, conceding the relatively late equalizer, they probably would have settled for a draw in the past.
Mm-hmm.
This Liverpool team was able to dig down deep, and it was a pretty phenomenal play and goal from Roberto Firmino to put that one in. I really liked what they did. I think they showed an intestinal fortitude that I have not seen recently from Liverpool. And I think that's going to serve them well this season. They are definitely a team to be reckoned with, despite the knock on, deservedly so, on PSG in the Champions League. Their performances have not lived up to the quality of the squad.
Right.
That is still probably the best team that Liverpool have played in a competitive match to this point in the season.
Yeah.
And for them to run out 3-2 winners in that game, and that was a big one for them, and they came back, they got that victory. I was really, really impressed, and I think that they're going to make a lot of noise. Now, it's a long season. I still question their squad depth. They're going to have a bobble in form, and we're going to have to see how they recover. But based on the strength of what I saw on Tuesday, this is a team that has a level of resilience that a lot of Liverpool teams over the course of the past 20-plus years have not had. And it's going to be interesting to see how they carry forward.
Well, you haven't seen flashes of this type of play for Liverpool in Europe. I mean, yes, they have historically really played well in Europe. And even with that last one they had, and I believe it was 06, they came back from being pretty far down against AC Milan. But, you know, they finaled last year. And for some reason, we say history doesn't matter, but it seems to keep rearing its ugly head. And Liverpool in Champions League, playing in these European competitions, just seems to know how to play. And but I do agree that we are going to see a dip in their form. The squad depth is definitely going to be a question, and they really better hope they can dodge the injury bug and hope they don't get hit by anything significant. I think having Daniel Sturridge back is going to be helpful for their attack. But again, yeah, the depth could conceivably be an issue, especially as guys get tired. Is there African Cup of Nations this year? I don't think so. It's off World Cup year.
I do not believe so.
Yeah.
And I think they've switched out of doing the African Cup of Nations mid-season. This should be. There is not, because the African nations have not been doing qualifying for the African Cup of Nations.
Right.
So, and they've changed the format of that tournament. So this is not an African Cup of Nations year. So
good,
they
good.
Will not have to worry about.
That's good. They don't have to worry about losing Matip and Mane.
For a significant part of the season,
yeah. Right.
And a critical part of the season over the winter.
Right.
That has always been a bugaboo for signing African players in the Premier League,
right.
Is the fact that
mm-hmm.
when that tournament does come up, you lose those guys in
and you lose
January,
them in February.
Right,
yeah,
when,
January and February. You don't want to lose them then.
Right when the season gets to a critical part, they're gone. And
mm-hmm.
you never know what you're going to get back when they come back. So
mm-hmm.
that's an important thing to keep an eye on, but you don't have to worry about it this year.
Yeah.
So I watched a little bit of the Premier League this weekend, but I focused more on MLS. And my good for the MLS comes from about 2.5 hours north of here, where we
mm-hmm.
are in rainy, DC metropolitan area. I got to give credit to the Philadelphia Union. He ran out
yes.
2-0 victors over MLS Western Conference leaders Sporting KC
mm-hmm.
with a B squad. Jay Simpson, who had scored all of one goal
mm-hmm.
in his MLS career, hit a brace for a much rotated side ahead of their game tomorrow against Houston down in Houston for the U.S. Open Cup.
U.S. Open Cup, yeah.
And Philadelphia Union just kept on this incredible run that they are on right now. 7-1-1 in their last 9, third in the form table, picking up a shade over 2 points a game for the month of August and September.
Yeah.
This would put them high in the running for the supporter shield if they had continued this over the course of the season. They
mm-hmm.
are probably on one of the best runs. And it goes along with the fact that last week, midweek on Wednesday, they went out to Seattle.
Yeah.
And down to 10 men, pulled off a late winner and snapped Seattle's MLS record 9-game winning streak. So this is a team, as we said last week, with the Union, they've got a really tough stretch coming up. And then I had said to you, if they could get 6 points out of this run against Seattle, home to KC, and then on the road at Columbus, I would take it. They've already
yeah.
got 6 points.
They've
they
already got 6 points. Yeah.
Columbus this weekend. And
mm-hmm.
tomorrow, 8 o'clock on ESPN, they're going to go up against Houston Dynamo for the U.S. Open Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Their third trip to the finals. All of them under Jim Curtin. And yet again, another chance for them to win their first piece of silverware. You know, Houston Dynamo, 8 wins, 8 draws, 13 losses, sitting in the bottom three
at
of
the bottom,
Western
yeah.
Conference.
Mm-hmm.
I would say more than a legitimate shot for the Philadelphia Union to pick up their first piece of silverware. And if they keep playing the way they are playing right now, I really genuinely think that they are a legitimate team to contend with
mm-hmm.
in the Eastern Conference going into the playoffs, because they're winning at home, they're winning on the road. They're doing what they need to do to win.
Yeah, and also you look at that early stretch, that seemed to be the first two games seem to be the more difficult part of this run that they've been on. So you're looking at, well, Columbus is really – Columbus is only one place ahead of them in the standings for the playoffs. So
they will flip-flop if they win on Saturday.
Right, right. But, again, I don't feel like that's not a squad, too, that is kind of breathing down their neck either. You have a nice little 6-point cushion up in Philly. And
mm-hmm.
looking at the fact that the – 7th and 8th place teams have either the same or a better goal differential. Having that 6-point cushion on Montreal, who has a worse goal differential for Philadelphia, is really sets Philly up nicely. And I think you're talking about getting that first piece of silverware. I feel like them having this little bit of cushion and having that little bit of goal differential cushion as well will allow them to really be able to focus on that U.S. Open Cup. And they
well,
know.
The advantage that they have is, unlike in Europe, when in the MLS, goal differential is not the first tiebreaker, it's wins.
True. It, yeah.
And right now, they're sitting with two more wins.
They're sitting with two more wins.
In Montreal,
right.
and five more than D.C.
Oh, absolutely.
And
Philly doesn't have to worry
more,
about D.C.
Yeah, one more than Columbus.
Yeah.
If they beat Columbus this weekend, they'll be in fourth place in line to host that first-round playoff game.
With a two-win cushion.
And the way that NYCFC is playing right now, which is not good, third isn't necessarily out of the question for the Union,
no,
which would set them up against
There's four
the
games
impact.
Left, right? Four games?
34 games,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they can
yeah,
set up four games left. You have lots of game left. Absolutely.
And so there's plenty of time. And they will play all their direct rivals. They've got games against Columbus. They've got Red Bulls at home. And they've got NYCFC up at Yankee Stadium.
Cool.
So if they win their games coming up, they're going to be in prime position.
But they're also
right
going to come in really hot, too. You're going to come in really hot.
I'm going back to early August, August the 4th, looking at a 3-0 loss on the road to Portland, which they then went U.S. Open semi-cup finals 3-0 at Chicago, pulled out a late winner in New England. 2-0 over NYCFC in Philadelphia, 1-0 against New England at home, 2-0 against DC United, a DC United game, team that had not lost at home before Philadelphia beat them.
That's right.
You know, they had
and hasn't lost at home since that game either.
Yeah. And we went out and beat Atlanta United the following Sunday.
Yeah.
A late 2-2 draw on a short week. In Orlando, came back after a weekend off, a 4-1 loss at home against Montreal, which they followed up with the 1-0 at Seattle and the 2-0 at home to Sporting KC. They're third in the form table right now. They beat the team that was in second in Seattle. And the only other team that is doing better than them is Atlanta, and they may be the best team in MLS right now. So
right.
A lot of good for the Philadelphia Union. As a former season ticket holder, I'm very happy to see them doing as well as they are right now. I will be watching and cheering them on and hoping that Jim Curtin can deliver them. You know, this is a team that has only had one winning season, their second, and made the playoffs twice, never won a playoff game. Yeah, it's time for them to show some sign of intent, and they're doing that right now.
Well, that's all good, and as a satellite Philly supporter with my little sister living up there now, and she's actually been to a couple of games at that stadium, so I'm definitely looking for Philly. And this to give my boys a shout, DC's got a huge game coming up, very very huge game. Coming up on a Saturday against the Montreal Impact, who's of course one seat above. But if you look at the standings here, DC United has two games in hand against Montreal. So they're 5 points down, but you have two games in hand. So if you get a win, you still have two games in hand. If you get this win over Montreal and you close the gap to 2 points. So you're looking and DC needs wins because DC's still sitting on 9 wins. So I feel like this is sort of a make or break game for them. If DC can get this win and really put pressure on Montreal, try to give yourself a little space between New England, because New England's on the same level of points with DC, as well as they're only one win behind. They do have a one game cushion, a one game game in hand against New England. But if DC can get that win, then that could hopefully give them the momentum they need to try to steal that last playoff spot. But again, when you're sitting in seventh, you only have 9 wins, and you're really having a late surge, you have to just look at the very next beyond anything. You got to just look at this game. I think it would be huge for the way DC started and with their abysmal road record. They have the worst road record in the Eastern Conference with 1 win and 9 losses and 6 ties. Stealing a playoff spot with that new stadium to try to reignite the fan base, because the fan base had really been turned off from RFK Stadium, which we talked about a few weeks ago. And I think that would be huge, to the point where I've even been looking into getting a game package for myself, and to make sure I can bring my man who I share this radio show with. I got to make sure I get the Philadelphia Union tickets as well, so we can go check out another game at that stadium.
Yeah, but then we got to sit in the visitor section.
Yeah, well, possibly.
we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that later.
I think you're absolutely right. DC, with the critical game against Montreal Impact, they're still there, thereabouts, which is, if you had asked me coming into July, given how they had started, I would have laughed at you. They were the worst team in the Eastern Conference.
They were
just about, if not for San Jose having struggled as much as they had, they would have been the worst team in all of MLS.
Right.
To put together the run that they have since mid-June when they moved into Audi, you know, all those home games helped them. They still got the advantage of all the home games. Remember, they are not leaving D.C. again.
No.
Until they go out to Chicago on the 28th of October.
October, yeah.
So all these teams have to come down here, and they have really made Audi Field a fortress.
Mm-hmm.
They need to capitalize on that because they're playing all their games at home. This road record doesn't mean much right now. Playoffs, get that momentum. When you get into the playoffs, weird things happen.
Yep.
There's nothing to say that they can't go. And again, NYCFC in third right now, in a free fall.
Mm-hmm.
Columbus, we don't know what we're going to get from them. Philadelphia could have the momentum, could be in third. That would be a really interesting first round playoff match. Both teams coming in hot.
Mm-hmm.
Could be interesting.
Yep.
But that 3-7, 3-8 in the Eastern Conference is really going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to leave out, you know, the playoff race in the West, also close. You know, Portland, Real Salt Lake, Seattle Sounders, who just lost two on the bounce but came in on a 9-game winning streak. LA Galaxy and Vancouver all separated by 7 points right now.
Yeah.
With four games left.
Yeah, so it's
that's
real
tight
over there, too. Yep, absolutely.
You know, this is as competitive a playoff race as I can recall in MLS.
Mm-hmm.
And stories abound, some of which we haven't talked about. You know, Atlanta United's offense on a record-setting pace.
Right.
You know, LAFC coming into the league, copying a page out of Atlanta United. You have a football guy in Bob Bradley, free reign to do what he does, pick up a big name in Carlos Vela, let him play, and compete.
Right.
And they've done a great job sitting in third.
Mm-hmm.
FC Dallas last year fell off really badly in the second half of the season, but we're seeing what they can actually deliver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sporting KC and Peter Vermes has just been as consistent as you can be.
Yeah.
Likely candidate for U.S. Men's National Team coach, which we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting stretch run in MLS at a time when I think we need it.
Yeah, I agree completely. At a time when we need it, absolutely. You have to continue to generate interest in the league, and this is the best thing for it. It's really, playoff races are exciting, and even with LA Galaxy, you know, Zlatan had a strong start. He seems to have tapered off, but they still, you know, there's a lot of names that are out in California. There's a lot of big, popular players that are going to keep eyes on the league, and that's always important.
I'm going to interject. This is not necessarily time for the ugly, but I'm going to give you a bonus ugly.
Yeah, I love
Did
bonuses.
Did you catch the announcement about a week, 10 days ago, 2 weeks, 10 days ago, of the new name for David Beckham's franchise in Miami?
Oh, they're not called Miami United, are they?
Even worse.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch it. What is it? Tell me, because I probably didn't remember hearing it.
And I'm going to give you the full one. Club Internacional de Football Miami.
Oh,
also known
God.
As Inter Miami.
That's right. I knew it was something. I knew it was something like that. Inter Miami. Oh, yeah. And, of course, Antoine Griezmann's already said that he would play for that squad. Inter Miami.
Had preliminary talks with Zinedine Zidane about managing it.
You know, I understand to an extent trying to give a team a name that has some that already has some cachet, already has some recognition, and you go to places in South America, you know, there's a Barcelona team, I believe it's in Ecuador or something. I think there's an Arsenal team in Argentina.
There's an Arsenal in South America as well.
There's an Arsenal there. So, you know, I get it, but come on, really? And maybe he's trying
to pander to the
strong
Hispanic
community. But I'm sorry. I just think it's lame.
A lot of these clubs, the Arsenals, that name comes from something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a sporting club that was formed for the people who worked at the Arsenal.
The Arsenal, right.
You know, some of these teams have names that mean something. Sheffield Wednesday.
Right.
Founded by union workers. Their day off was Wednesday.
Wednesday.
They played on Wednesday, so they became Wednesday. Calling yourself Club Club International de Football Miami is a poor attempt at cultural appropriation.
Yes.
And the odd thing is the most famous Inter is not even Spanish. It's Italian.
It's Italian, yeah. Yeah. Internacional, which is in
Inter
Milan.
With anything Spanish, I associate Inter with Italy.
Right.
And I was
right.
looking it up. There actually is no club in Spain that is Inter anything.
Anything. Not even in like League Two or League Three? Nope.
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. I don't know.
No.
I think it is a lame attempt at some sort of appropriation. I really do. And it's sad that because the sport isn't quite at the level that people hoped it would be in the United States, that they feel the need to do that with naming these teams. I'm sorry. I think it's idiotic. I really do.
I would have loved it. I would have loved it if they had just come out and said, we are going to be called the Miami Vice.
Yeah. That would have been fine. That would have been fine.
I would have said that is the perfect name for it. Just like I thought Philadelphia Union with the history of unions in Philly, the establishment, the signing of the Constitution, that was a perfect name for Philly. I appreciate the fact that they went there. I could even go with DC United. It's not DC United FC. It's just DC United. It works.
It works.
You know,
it works. But the problem is now we have
– club. KC.
Yeah.
Sporting clubs typically are clubs that have more than one sport.
Right.
Right? Like Sporting Lisbon has basketball. They have other sports that they play.
Think of those clubs in Turkey like Fenerbahce and Galatasaray. They have 10, 11, 12 sports that they participate.
You know, Real Salt Lake. Real is a designation given to clubs that have obtained some sort of recognition from the King of Spain.
Right. I was,
last time
that
I
was
checked,
the
only
I was
team
bring
that
up.
The United States has ever had was Elvis.
Or BB. Don't forget about BB.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But you also look at it, though. I'm still frustrated at the fact that there are three teams called United. There are three teams.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. I don't get it. The league has not been around long enough for that to exist. You know, you can understand when you had these teams that were formed where you're not playing against the club that's across the country. You're not doing that. So the name saturation it shouldn't be at this level when the teams were formed literally 15, 20 years ago in some way newer than
United is technically a designation in England that comes when two teams from the same area
form one team, when they merge. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Did we merge with the Richmond
Manchester
Kickers?
United was not originally Manchester United. They were Newton Heath, Lancashire, and Yorkshire Railway.
Mm. Right.
And they merged and formed with another team and formed Manchester United. So,
I'm over it. I'm over it. I really am. I'm over it. I really am.
Even as an American soccer fan, I would just like to see them. You are American. The American.
Right. Like, and what's odd to me is that you do these with the names, but you know, you remember the early days of MLS. They had to Americanize soccer. So they tried to change all the rules around. So you appropriate, you take names that are something that you actually could take some ownership of, but then you change the fundamental point of the game. It's just backwards. It's backwards. Keep the name the same. How long did it take for MLS to actually let the referee hold the clock? How long did it take MLS to get rid of having shootouts after every game? I mean, that was dumb. It was really, really dumb. And yet they still, though, are going to call themselves International Day of Football Miami.
You know, it's always been an amalgamation of trying to appropriate what worked over in Europe and combine it with what was good about NASL during its heydays in the early in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I think we should have just made a complete break and gone in our own direction.
Yes. And just because something was successful for a very short period of time in the 70s, though, we got to remember it wasn't successful very long.
Yeah, but when it was, man, was it fun.
Oh, it was hype. I bet it was, but it wasn't successful. I mean, I don't know. I guess it'd be, is there a USFL team name that's in the NFL right now? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of USFL teams that are in because of the merger.
I'm talking about that league in the 80s that happened.
Oh, no, I don't know that there are any.
Yeah.
But there are AFL teams, but I don't know if any of the USL teams made it. But so, but moving on, keeping things rolling, I want to give one big shout out to, again, to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, Montgomery County and the D.C. area's premier place to watch live sports. They got the Conor McGregor fight coming up on October 6th.
I'll be there.
No place better to watch an Irishman fight than an Irish pub.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to go in between, they got food and beverage specials for all Premier League and American football matches on the weekend. We were just down there. Let me tell you, I was just down there on Sunday and went out to catch, you know, a little bit of the late game after the Washington football team and the Eagles won. And we were just having a good time, and all of a sudden about 12 Green Bay Packers fans walked in. No, it was a great time.
Those are good people, man. They Harvin Fiddle is a perfect place for Green Bay Packers fans to go and hang out. I'll put it that way.
And they were having a good time, and we were chatting, and it was funny. I got a picture of all of them in their Green Bay Packers gear and me in my Eagles jersey.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. The funny thing was, it was the one day that I decided not to wear a green Eagles jersey.
So you looked like a Packers fan when they probably saw you.
Yeah, probably I did, I had on the old, like, 2007, 75th anniversary Franklin Arsenal UCLA-looking throwback on.
Yeah.
And so that was an interesting time, but it was really a great time. So it, just a great time to go out, a great place, great time to go out and head out and hang out for a game. Go down, catch the soccer, go down, catch the football, go down late at night on late nights on Fridays and Saturdays and catch some really great live music. So as always, very much a thanks to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle down on Cordell Avenue in Bethesda for bringing us to you again tonight. So we covered good. Let's get to the bad.
Yeah. I'll start with the bad. Manchester City. Not a way to start your Champions League campaign. Now, I will say Lyon is not a squad that's unfamiliar to Europe. They're not a squad that's unfamiliar to this competition. But it's Lyon. It's Lyon.
Mm-hmm.
And to lose at home at your opening game of Champions League, I felt really bad for Cardiff the following weekend because you knew Cardiff was going to feel the wrath of their disappointment. But I think that's a bad loss. It's just a bad loss. And if Manchester City, we all know, they've won plenty of Premier League titles. They've won domestic cups. And we all know that with the owners and why they brought in Pep and why they spent the money a couple of years ago and why they're really trying to get this nice firm squad together is to win Champions League. Now, I'm not saying they're not going to win Champions League now, I'm just saying, though, you don't want to start the campaign in this hole. I just think that it's going to be it's just going to make things that much more difficult for them to focus on the league and Champions League at the same time, because they're still the prohibitive favorite to win the league. And but I just think starting off with a loss, hopefully for their sake, they'll reel off their next three and they'll win convincing fashion, because you don't have to win your you don't have to win your group. You don't have to do that. But starting off with a loss, that's just not a good way to start.
Performance brought up or reignited a narrative about Pep that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He won the two Champions Leagues
mm-hmm.
with Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
But has generally underperformed in the Champions League since.
Right.
You know, he three seasons at Bayern Munich, won the league every season, won the German Cup every season.
Yeah, well, you and I can win the league with Bayern Munich.
Yeah, well, underperformed in the Champions League. Manchester City, going into his third year, won league title, you know, dominated the league. Early exits from the Champions League.
Right.
Not to say that they won't come back, not that they can't come back, that they don't have a squad that is capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go into this, it just brings back that uncomfortable feeling and those questions about whether or not Pep has it like he you would expect him to when it comes to Champions League football. And you certainly don't want a performance like that. You know, defensive error leads to an early goal. They get
right.
the equalizer, and then they concede, and that's the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen this happen.
Yep.
We know the story. We know the script. We just don't know how long the movie lasts.
Right.
There's always a chance for a surprise ending.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to get that Champions League campaign started off that way. The games are going to get tougher.
Right.
You're going to face much stiffer opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, an early loss. Do they have the capacity to compete on the number of fronts that they need to? Because this is a team that needs to be competing basically on four fronts throughout the course of the season. You know, they picked up a 3-0 win to advance in the Carabao Cup today. They're expected to be in that competition, the FA Cup, the Champions League, and the Premier League. That's a lot.
That is a lot. Mm-hmm.
And
a lot.
Is there going to come a point, especially late in the season, where Pep again has to make some really tough decisions about where he wants to focus his attention? Is he going to be able to get over that hump and win a Champions League without Lionel Messi?
And all the other horses they had on that team, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And luckily for them, they're in a weak group. I mean, they are. They're in a weak group. So, you know, you can eat a loss to Lyon early and get out of the group just fine. But this goes back to the narrative that you just brought up. They're still involved in four competitions. And, yeah, he's going to have to focus. He's going to have to focus his attention on something in particular. Now, the League Cup, first of all, the League Cup always seems to turn out being some either mid or lower level Premier League team, or even sometimes a championship team that'll reach the semis, and one of the big boys will get to the final. It's not too often that you see two big boys in the final. So you could see, I believe Manchester United lost today in their League Cup on a penalty.
That was going to be one of my uglies.
Okay,
well
we'll talk about that
later.
Yeah. But you know, but even with that, I mean, I'll say this again later. It's not surprising. So I could see Pep really putting out a bunch of 18 and 19-year-olds in the League Cup, especially if, let's say, they got a Hoffenheim next and they get a draw because they got to go on the road. So you could see him saying, maybe we got to not focus on this one right now.
Phil Foden, the young attacking midfielder for Manchester City, was the
promising
star of this game.
Yeah,
promising young kid. I think he earned a start in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
And he does use that as an opportunity to put some youth in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I am starting to see a lot more of the bigger teams take that tournament a little bit more seriously than they have, mostly because it's competed early in the season.
True.
When teams are fresher, you know, you have fewer commitments, and it's an early opportunity to get silverware and a guaranteed place in Europe.
Right.
And so you do see the likes of, you know, Manchester United won it 2 years ago. You have seen teams take it a little bit more seriously recently than they have in the past.
And it seems like they take it more seriously when they get to maybe a quarterfinal and they go, oh, we're sitting in the quarterfinals. Okay. And, you know, Arsenal lost the cup final. I think it was last year they were in that cup final and lost. So, you know, it's still a competition that just because you're a big boy and you get to the final, you know, there's no real guarantee of anybody actually winning that thing. I mean, I think one of the great games was when Swansea won that title, I think about 4 or 5 years ago. That was a fantastic game. And I was really happy to see that squad win their first piece of silverware. I mean, it was nice.
And they got a European place out of them.
And they got a European place out of them.
And I think it's helped them stay up.
Yeah. And it put some money in their pockets.
Yeah, it's worth it to compete. Now, of course, it is impossible to see because it is only on ESPN Plus, so it's another one of those subscriber-based tournaments that you can only watch if you're paying.
I gotta pay $100 a month just to watch the games I want to see, man.
You know, it is getting more and more expensive.
Yeah.
To be a football fan and try and follow your team, but
absolutely,
we do what we must.
Yeah.
So,
but for the sake
I'll
of time,
give you my bad for the week.
Let's get on your bad.
I'm going to go back to MLS for my bad. My bad is Toronto FC. They're lost this weekend, all but eliminated them from the playoffs. And this season has just been, by any definition, an abject failure.
Yeah.
You know, coming off of the treble last season, say what you will about that, winning the MLS Cup, the Supporters Shield for the best record, setting an MLS wins record, and winning the Canadian Challenge Cup, the first team in MLS history to win all three trophies available to them. Remember, they can't win the U.S. Open Cup because they're Canadian.
Right.
Go in, setting their sights on the CONCACAF Champions League, which they get to the finals and lose to Club America. And they have just not recovered. There was they said early in the season that they were going to focus on the CONCACAF Champions Cup League, and they put all of their resources into that, believing that they could sacrifice those first 5 to 7 games and still get back on a 34-game season in the playoff contention, and it just has not happened.
Yeah.
Defense hasn't been anywhere near as effective as it is. Sebastian Giovinco is just not having the campaign that he has had in the past.
You know, he's
Jose
a monster,
Altidore's
too.
Been,
I mean, for a guy that's
has been in and out of the lineup. It has just been all the Toronto FC.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to have to really make some tough decisions this season about where they go with this project. You know, they spent all that money to get in Giovinco, to get in Michael Bradley, to get in Josie Altidore, to bring all those players together. They won one MLS Cup. They made it to another final. They won the treble. But there's still this feeling that I have that they should have done more.
Well,
I think the biggest casualty is going to be Greg Vanney, who was in the running for the U.S. job. And I look at him after this season, and I'm not sure that I want him.
Well, especially because you just brought up the defense. They haven't had a clean sheet since July 28th. And they've lost 4 of their last 5, and they're losing by at least 2 goals. So the defense really is not doing their part. And you're looking at an American team where attacking has never been really how the U.S. wins. They've been a team that knows how to control the game in the defensive third and counter, and get some really nice open play, some nice crossing, some nice through balls. That's the kind of goals that they score. So if you're thinking of bringing in a coach who doesn't seem to know how to keep the ball out of the net, yeah, I that doesn't breed confidence in me either. Just looking at the way the American team has played over the last couple of decades, it just seems like that type doesn't fit the American mold. Now, that may change. You know, we've talked about that a few weeks ago, how we really wanted to see these young boys come up. We have a lot of young attacking talent that's playing meaningful games in Europe in their domestic leagues, first and second divisions. So, you know, that might be there. But I think for purposes of what the U.S. needs right now, I mean, that does not – I'm not sure I'd want him either.
Yeah, I got a lot of questions. And I even wondered at this point whether he can – I think he has gotten an extension based on last season.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to go in the next season, and there's going to be a lot of questions there. So just they are the bat of this season for MLS.
Yeah.
So we got about 15 minutes left before this clock strikes midnight on us. Mm-hmm. Let's jump right into the ugly.
Yeah. Again, I'm going to keep my ugly pretty quick because I know we got a couple other things we want to talk about, especially I really want to talk about some of the FIFA stuff. But I don't know, in my injury plagued weekend and my physical, you know, I was physically under the weather weekend, I was flipping through a lot of games, and it seemed like outside of Liverpool, the play of the center halves in the Premier League was really there were some struggles going on. I mean, you look at the Southampton game, and they have two guys that who their center halves look like they could both be playing small and power forward for an NBA team as big as they are, and they had an own goal, and I believe they were giving up headers to players that were nearly a foot shorter than them. And then, you know, the poor goalkeeper at Cardiff. I mean, he was just getting peppered. And it seemed like a lot of these and Arsenal. Arsenal's lucky that they won. They could have been down 3-0 to Everton easily in the first 20 minutes of that game. And it's in Arsenal's situation, you have two new center halves. And it just seemed like I saw this. And, of course, I could be projecting because I'm an Arsenal fan. But it seems like I saw a lot of partnerships in the defense for a number of Premier League teams that seemed like they didn't know what each other were doing. They were not on the same page. Maybe they haven't just been together long enough. But it was pretty sloppy. And without some really beautiful goalkeeping – that took place. I'm thinking of West Ham's goalie, Fabianski, former Arsenal player, who had some great saves. And then Cech basically is the reason why the Arsenal won the game. It was pretty sloppy. And then on the offensive side, Crystal Palace with Sakho and Yarmolenko at West Ham both had chances at the end of their games to get wins that their squads so desperately need. They so desperately need to get a win. They're both flirting with the bottom of the table. Wide open goal, headers coming straight at them. All they got to do is just turn their head and bop it right in, and they both missed wide. And you're sitting here going, that is like that first touch, that understanding is the main difference between teams that are able to win games and teams that aren't. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And you know it's sad when they show that replay more than any other replay of the game is two missed headers. So that was my ugly for the weekend. I just was like, am I watching Premier League ball? Because this is awfully sloppy.
I'm going to give you – I agree wholeheartedly. The defensive play in the Premier League for most of the teams outside of the top four has been disappointing.
Yeah.
My ugly – I'll save my original ugly. I will get to my new ugly, which was – Manchester United, you mentioned this a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Manchester United going out of the Carabao Cup is not so much that they went out, it's how they went out to Derby County today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going a man down after Sergio Romero gets a red card in the 67th minute.
Mm-hmm.
They got a late equalizer deep into injury time. I mean,
that was Fergie
8
time.
Minutes or 6 minutes of injury time, they get a header from Marouane Fellaini.
Mm-hmm.
Then after what was actually a pretty good penalty shootout.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Jones just with one of the softest penalties gets saved and they go out.
Oh, really?
Just keeping the pressure.
Wow.
keeping the pressure on Jose Mourinho to the point where I'm not 100% sure that we don't see the south end of a northbound facing Mourinho relatively soon.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger issue that I see with this is Mourinho, fantastic coach. Bona fides unmatched. Champions League with Porto, Champions League with Inter Milan,
mm-hmm.
you know, your titles with Porto, Real Madrid, Milan, Chelsea. He's been a winner everywhere he went. But mm-hmm. I would say these last two stints at Chelsea and Manchester United have not done his reputation a lot of favors.
No.
I wonder if he loses this job after the season. I highly doubt that Man United gets rid of him during the season. That's just not how they do business.
Right.
But I can't see him getting another high-profile job. It just looks like there is a massive disconnect between him and the players right now, and they just mm-hmm. don't want to play for him.
Right.
And I wonder what this does to the special one who has just recently looked like the ordinary one.
Yeah. And it's reminiscent of the way he flamed out at Chelsea. I mean, the players just refused to play for him. And it was really sad to see because, like it or not, he is the best coach Chelsea has ever had and probably will ever have for quite a long time. And the way they just folded up on him. And then to see at Manchester United, and I'm not sure how much of this is blown out of proportion, but they're really making no qualms about the poor relationship between him and Paul Pogba. And, you know, we talked about this before, how if Pogba goes, is that going to just kind of start a little bit of a Pied Piper where other players just sort of follow him out as well? So, yeah, Manchester United is going to have some decisions to make, some real decisions to make.
So I want to get to my other ugly before
the
clock strikes midnight. On us.
Yeah.
And that was the FIFA Awards. And they were just ugly in a weird way.
Yeah.
Now, my key culprit in this is Mo Salah.
Yep.
Who I rate highly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had one of the best seasons in Europe, if not the best season
mm-hmm.
in Europe. Highest
mm-hmm.
scorer in Europe last year.
Yep.
So let's talk about his FIFA Awards, which were held this week in London.
Mm-hmm.
Left out of the FIFA 11 to Kylian
mm-hmm.
Mbappe, despite the fact that he scored 41 goals
mm-hmm.
for club and country last year
mm-hmm.
to Mbappe's 30-something.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mbappe had 36
mm-hmm.
France and PSG.
Mm-hmm.
Wins the Puskas Award for best goal of the season for his strike against Everton in the Merseyside derby, which, don't get me wrong, fantastic goal, but nowhere near.
No. I mean,
what Gareth Bale came up with in the Champions League final. I mean, Gareth
right.
Bale's overhead kick in the Champions League final was something that just took the air out of everything
absolutely.
That was around it. I
absolutely.
Mean, I've never been in a situation where I've seen so many people who just look like they had smelled some foul food, just like aggassed how impressive
yeah.
this thing was.
Right.
And,
I mean, that had the opposing fans applauding. They were just like, holy,
that was
that?
One of those ones where you looked at it and everybody just had that stank face like,
yeah.
I just saw something, I'm not sure what it was.
Right.
And somehow when... And perhaps the best moment was his wholehearted snub of Gary Neville on the way in.
Oh.
Just left him hanging. But the overall, just questions about the FIFA 11. You know,
mm-hmm.
I do want to give credit, though. FIFA Player of the Year, for the first
yeah.
time in the better part of 1,365 years, does not go to either Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi.
Rather,
Luka Modric,
mm-hmm.
based pretty much, I would say, solely on his performance in the World Cup, taking him FIFA Player of the Year.
Yeah.
And deservedly so.
Right.
And I think he was a key player for Real Madrid last year, maybe not as high profile on the score sheet as Cristiano Ronaldo, but definitely a vital part of everything they did. And just willing Croatia to a World Cup final. He deserves all the accolades he gets.
Right.
But just a very, very interesting set of circumstances. So taking out the Luka Modric thing aside, just Mo Salah with a weirdly ugly night.
Yeah,
I would say.
And it's almost like they gave Mo Salah that goal because he wasn't on the team, and they said, you
Which
know
is
what?
Interesting, because how does the guy that finishes? Yeah, how does the guy that finishes third in the voting for Player of the Year not make
the team
the
of
best
the
best 11?
Right.
Yeah.
And the guy who made the team of the year finished below him. And they really play the same position.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And my initial thought was, well, they did win the World Cup, so they had to stick him in there. But then you go look at the squad, they already have Rafael Varane in there. They already have N'Golo Kanté in there. And we have made no we've made every single thing known how we feel about N'Golo Kanté, and we think he deserves every award that he could possibly win. So you already had it there. You didn't need a third French a player from that squad in there. You didn't need it. So
I found it very odd.
I
think N'Golo Kanté is as good, if not better, than everybody else. I don't know who plays N'Golo Kante's position right now as well as N'Golo Kante.
Right.
Rafael
I don't know
Varane
a striker
is,
that plays their position better than N'Golo Kante plays his position.
I don't know of a player, full stop.
Yeah.
that plays their position, maybe in any sport, as well as N'Golo Kante plays his position. So I have no problem with that. Varane, probably a good center back, is a great center back, a rock for Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can argue whether Samuel Umtiti or he was the key to France.
Right.
I'll let you have that one. At the end of the day, Real Madrid wins the Champions League. He wins the World Cup, therefore he is in.
Right, of course.
You know, I look at Dani Alves. Is there anybody else in the world that effectively plays right back outside of Dani Alves?
No. No.
Because he just seems to, like, walk into that team no matter what he does.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I agree. And did they put Marcelo on there, too?
Yeah, I think – no.
That didn't make sense to me either.
Yeah, and it just seems like, oh, well, this is the guy who's been in it before, so we'll pick him again.
Right, put him in there again. Yeah, so you're not paying attention to that squad either. You're not paying attention to the defense.
Well, they say a lot of it was fan voting, and I wonder how much that had to do with it. Mm-hmm. But if fan voting also for the Puskas Award pushed Mo Salah over the top for that Everton goal, why didn't fan voting figure as much into getting him into the top 11? I will make jokes about people in Liverpool, but I figure that they can identify Mo Salah on a ballot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should pick this up again next week, because I'd like to discuss this more. But we're getting down to the final minute, and I just want to throw in, I do have a meh for the week, something that I'm just going to kind of look at. Europa League started, you know, I'll keep an eye on it. When it gets down, because, you know, there's like 175 teams that play in the group stage in the Europa League, so when it gets down to it, I may pay attention a bit more, but that's my meh. That's my parting shot as well.
I'll take it. If I'm going to watch for, we got some interesting top-of-the-table clashes this week. Serie A,
absolutely.
Juventus-Napoli, Bundesliga, Hertha Berlin and Bayern Munich, and one that I always like. Can't go wrong with the Madrid derby, Real and Atletico.
Yeah, that's a good derby. Yep, absolutely.
So anybody looking for something to watch, there's three suggestions for you. So as we get down and we're up against it, one more shout-out goes to our friends at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle. Thank you for keeping us on the air and allowing us to bring you our personal feelings on the world of football. So, Stead.
Yes, sir.
Parting words of wisdom as we close out the show.
Parting words of wisdom are, even though Manchester United did have to go out. They did win their first Open League Champions League game, 3-0 the Young Boys. And we know that, if anything, Manchester United is going to come to play in Europe. So I am going to think that that could be a spot where Jose Mourinho can definitely get back some positive goodwill. Good start to the Champions League campaign.
Arsenal picking up a win in the Europa League.
Oh. Mm. Thank you very much.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? That's right.
All right.
All right.
Once again, this is the Two Guys Soccer Podcast for Stead.
Yes.
And producer Paul, thank you very much for keeping us on the air this evening. I'm Mike. We did all right
I'm
this
Stead.
Week. We'll try and
did
do
all right.
better next week.
All right. Always love talking to you, my friend.